Last week marked the death of a great, if largely forgotten, American. Robert Height was a co-pilot in the legendary Doolittle's bombing raids over Tokyo in the midst of World War II. Doolittle's raiders shattered the idea that Japan was invulnerable and changed the psychology of the war. Height's oral history has been preserved by the Air Force Historical Research Agency. Joining me with more of what the agency does, its director, Charles O'Connell. Dr. O'Connell, great to have you on.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to speak to you this morning.
All right. Tell us the scope of what the agency does. How far back does it even go?
Yeah. The Air Force Historical Research Agency is largely the holder of the Air Force's documentary history collection. The collection dates back to material that was generated during World War I, but after the war, much of that material was destroyed. So when World War II started, President Roosevelt, General Marshall, directed the services to do a more comprehensive job of documenting their history. So the bulk of our collection dates from roughly 1941, 1942 in terms of organizational histories, and the Air Force has been collecting those organizational histories pretty much ever since. So most of what is in our collection here is documentary histories of Air Force organizations. Our holdings include those histories in both paper and electronic and microfilm formats. We have a limited collection of photographs that is not as well organized as it should be. We're working on that right now. We also have some maps. We have some blueprints. That's pretty much the scope of our collection. The collection initially began with the material going into Washington, D.C. in 1942. In 1949, the collection was shipped down here to Maxwell Air Force Base, and the agency in various designations has had it here ever since.
And so you're kind of far away from the other Air Force historical repository, the physical one in Dayton.
Right, right. And we also have different missions. Dayton, of course, is more interested in artifacts. The flying jackets and the aircraft and the missiles and all the other things that the National Museum displays. And we tend to get the documentary collections. Every once in a while, we do pass material back and forth. We can help them support exhibits that they're developing and that type of work. The collection was moved down here with the understanding that the students at Air University, which is also at Maxwell Air Force Base, would have access to the collection to conduct research in initially World War II operations, and since then, as material has come in, the Air University students come over, use the material to study whatever topic appeals to them as they're working through their year at Air Command and Staff College, Air War College, the courses that are offered down here at Air University.
Now, there's some pretty detailed things here. I'm just picked one at random, the 8 Fighter Wing, PACAF. This was just posted recently, it so happens, in this year, just last month. And it gives the lineage, the assignments, the operational components in small type.
Right.
Where does this, who generates this, and how does what kind of format does it come into you as?
Basically, that material is generated by our organizational histories branch, and what that material, the start of that lineage and honors, which is what we call the lineage and honors statement, the start of that material came from index cards that were shipped down here from the people who updated those records during World War II. And these index cards are literally pen and pencil entries that say 8th in whatever the initial designation was. And then as we receive orders, documenting organizational changes, changes in key personnel, changes in station, we update that data on those record cards. Now, of course, that's all done on a computer. But because the cards go all the way back to that organization when it was first started, we can trace that through, and then we post them on the lineage and honor statements, which are updated as changes occur. On the web page, which is where you saw that. So basically, we tend to focus on active organizations. So if an organization is inactivated, it will usually drop off of our web page. But if someone's interested in an organization that isn't active, they can always get in touch with us, and we can dig that information out for them. We are constantly working on that because the material to update that comes in periodic historical reports we still get from these organizations, and we go through those and say, well, there's been a change in commander. They were redesignated, whatever it happens to be. So that's one of our functions here, is to keep those lineage and honor statements current.
Because looking at this 8th Fighter Wing, it has had several names starting in 1948 and then coming back to the original name in 1992.
Right.
And so there's a lot to keep up with here. My question here, though, is there any way of making this in a searchable format? Because right now it's just a kind of a string of text.
We're working on that. Our computer system here is not really what it should be. We're trying to get it updated. We are converting everything to PDF, which, if nothing else, you'll be able to download the Adobe format, and you can search it that way. What we really need, though, is to convert the whole thing. There is a database behind it, and make that database of information more readily accessible to people who are interested. Right now, we do have to just go by what's on those individual pages. I was working on a question last week trying to trace a document through, and I was thinking thinking of some of the changes we need to make in that, in the way we present that information.
Yeah, because there's a lot of names in here that are meaningful to somebody, even though they might be for largely unknown.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we're working on that. It's as with so many other things, it's just a question of both personnel and financial resources to find the people and the time and the money to get that project more underway than it is now. We're doing better with some of the more recent lineage and honors changes because they go into a database. But right now, we're still forced to update the lineage and honors pages.
I see in one of these deep in there in '97, Colonel Mark A. Welsh III is mentioned as a commander. That's the Mark Welsh who.
Yes, sir.
Lucky find. We're speaking with Dr. Charles O'Connell. He's director of the Air Force Historical Research Agency at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama. What kind of staffing do you have to support all of this effort?
We've just absorbed some cuts. We're down to about 40 people right now.
All right. And I wanted to ask you about some of the imagery I'm seeing right at their homepage today. There's a rotating set of photos of one person's collection of a particular type of plane.
Right.
Do you have negatives and so forth from way back?
We have all kinds of photographic material. Generally speaking, it's things that come in as part of the organizational histories that we collect, or it's material that has been donated to us by the people who have the collection. The collection I believe you're speaking of is the B-26s that are out there. I assume that's the one. There is a collection of B-26 photographs there. Those were donated to us some time ago. They come in, and again, what's in the histories is here, and that's the bulk of the collection. We have all kinds of formats, when they come in, we scan them, so that that's part of the preservation process. Most of what we have is based on the organizational structure. We have on our webpage information on several of the more discrete collections that we've been able to gather up over the years. But again, if someone is looking for specific photographs, all they have to do is get in touch with us, and we can search the collection by hand if we have to, if we know the time period and the organization and perhaps the person's name.
And once you do digitize materials like that, especially the old ones, do you still retain the silver negatives?
Yes, absolutely. And those everything that we store here, we store as best we can according to modern archival standards. We have a climate-controlled facility and then a separate climate-controlled facility for the negatives and for the we have a little bit of film. That's not one of the things that we primarily collect, but we have anything that's in a format that is likely to fade or whatever over time. We try and do our best to keep them in a controlled environment to try and control the loss of of utility of the documents.
And I wanted to ask you about the oral histories, because I know
right.
that Robert Height, one of the raiders who recently died, I guess he leaves only two now remaining
right.
from those original Doolittle's raiders. You've got an oral history of him. How did that
yeah.
happen to get taken, and how can the public hear it?
Well, the public can hear it. We have that in paper. We don't have an oral history, a tape that we can play. That was taped. I'm not exactly sure when it was done, but it was done on tape and then transcribed. Now, again, we almost certainly have the tapes here, but I don't have any idea what the quality of the original audio tape would have been. But anyway, if they're interested, we can make digital copies available to people if they just let us know that they'd like to see it, and we'll send them a copy. But in any event, at some point, Mr. Height indicated that he was willing to talk to someone to talk about his experiences on the Doolittle raid, his time as a prisoner in Japan, his life after he returned to the United States. The agency sent a person out to talk to him. The transcription, I believe, runs the better part of 200 pages. I think it's like 185, 186 pages. So Mr. Height was willing to talk very freely and at great length about his experience. We brought it back here. We transcribed it. We added it to our collection, which consists of, probably the better part of 800, 850 oral history interviews that have been collected with various people over the years. We go from chiefs of staff and secretaries of the Air Force to someone like Mr. Height, who was a former prisoner of war who agreed to speak on tape, and we took the processing from there.
Because, you know, there's so much hype these days and books
right.
and movies about one prisoner of war, Louis Zamperini, and
right.
it is a compelling story, but there's probably hundreds like it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that we have hundreds in our collection, but if you take a look at what we have here, of what the Library of Congress is doing, what's being collected in all of the many repositories across the federal government, you're absolutely right. There are undoubtedly hundreds, if not thousands, of those stories out there.
And do you get good support from the leadership of the Air Force that's sending you in this material as it happens?
Yes, we do. The periodic histories that we collect from the organizations, they come in regularly. They're due on an annual basis, and almost all of them come in on time. And if they don't come in exactly on time, they'll get here within a reasonable amount of time. And we get good support from the Air Staff. The Office of Air Force History in Washington is the organization that I directly work for. They help us to arrange funding and to make sure that we have the equipment and the people and the funds that we need to accomplish our mission.
All right. Charles O'Connell is director of the Air Force's Historical Research Agency. Thanks so much for joining me.
Okay, sir. Thank you for calling.